The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball. It's Wednesday, January 7th, 2015. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chesko. And tonight, Chet, we're very pleased to welcome back Eagles and NFL expert Hall of Famer Ray Dittinger. Will be making his second visit to the show. But before we bring Ray on, I'd like to say welcome back, partner, and hope you had enjoyed Christmas and the New Year's holidays with your family and friends.
I did indeed, Bill. Happy New Year to you as well. Santa apparently didn't get my letter asking for an Eagles Super Bowl appearance this year. Didn't even get a playoff appearance. Bill, it's a shame that with the Birds not even in the postseason that we have almost nothing to talk about tonight, you know?
Oh, I think it's great to have Ray on because I think you and I both have a whole bunch of questions. I know our listeners and followers do, and I think it's going to be a great show tonight. And I know Ray will have some real strong opinions on these things too. So let's before we welcome Ray to the show, let's get our Eagles trivia question out there quick so people can think about that and get ready to answer later on in the show. We'll be giving away a signed 8x10 black and white photo of Gino Marchetti, Hall of Famer, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles in Havertown, to the first person that can call in and correctly answer the question. For those that might not recognize Gino, he turned 88 years old this week and has been in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, Chet, for longer than most of us have been around. He was inducted in 1972. The man fought in the Battle of the Bulge. So he'd been around a long time and is a true gentleman if you ever had the opportunity to meet him, which I have several times. So our shopforkisses.org phone lines will be open at 929-477-2855. So feel free to give us a call throughout the show. And our question is this. When is the last time the Eagles traded their first-round draft pick? That should be a pretty easy one for everybody. When is the last time the Eagles traded their first-round draft pick? Again, our call-in number to answer the trivia question is 929-477-2855. Ray, welcome back to the show.
Nice to be back with you guys.
All right. Well, before we get started talking Eagles, Ray, I wanted to pass on a comment that I thought you would get a charge out of from one of our listeners, Robbie Ellis. When she was told that you were going to be on the show, her comment was, "He is the godfather of football."
Well,
and I
that's
think
very
it was meant in a very complimentary way.
Well, I appreciate that. I take it in that spirit. That's very nice.
All right. Okay, well, Chet, lots to talk about. Let's get after Ray.
All right. First, Ray, of course, we have to discuss the Eagles' front office shakeup. Within the span of 4 days last week, Chip Kelly praises Tom Gamble and hints that Howie Roseman is good at salary cap issues and the like. Gamble gets fired, and then on Friday, the Eagles announced that Kelly would be getting near complete control of football matters, about on par with Bill Belichick and Pete Carroll, while Roseman, though given a raise and a fancy title, would be stripped of his personnel powers. So, Ray, before we talk about whether this might work, what the heck led to all of this?
I think it's pretty self-evident that that Chip and Howie just didn't get along, and that that Chip views Howie as a guy that is really best suited for handling contracts and salary cap issues, but in Chip's mind is not a guy that should be evaluating of football personnel, shouldn't be handling free agency, shouldn't be running the draft. That Chip feels like that's something that should be the province of him and his coaches and the circle of people whose football opinion he trusts. And, you know, Howie has, ever since he got from the time he joined the organization, has, I mean, he came in as a salary cap guy. He came in as a contract guy, a law school graduate, but he always, you know, he always aspired to move over to the football side. That was, you know, he used the law degree to get through the front door, but he always wanted to become a quote-unquote football guy. He wanted to be involved in personnel, and he achieved that. He got that. And, you know, that's an area where he was involved. And over the last couple of years, he's been very actively involved in making trades and helping out with the draft. And Chip just felt like, no, that shouldn't be, you know. And he's fine. He's fine to be here. He's fine to handle the dollars and cents, but I don't want him involved in football decisions. So they came to a clash. This had been kind of, you know, we had kind of heard rumors and rumblings about it during the season that there was some internal discord, and it finally all came to a head right after the final game of the season. And so now you have this sort of very uneasy kind of, I guess truce would be the best way of putting it, down at NovaCare, which where you have Chip Kelly has now got all the power, and all the personnel decisions will now be made by him and his people. And Howie, while he's gotten a bigger title and a contract extension, has now been sort of pushed back over to the other side, where he's going to be dealing with contracts and money, but he's not going to be involved in personnel. And can that situation go on, and can everybody be happy? I kind of think not. I mean, my view of it is, I mean, Jeff Lurie's statement sort of tried to paint a happy face on all this, but I think what you've got is a pretty messy situation that could wind up bringing this team down. I mean, we saw what happened to the San Francisco 49ers this past year. With what, you know, that's a pretty good example of what can happen to a football team when you have the football operation and the general manager side working at cross purposes. And you saw that was a good football team, maybe the best football team in the league over the last 3 years. And this year they didn't even make the playoffs because they couldn't get their act together in the front office. And I fear the Eagles are treading on the same kind of ground right now.
Yeah, and Kelly's been in the pros just 2 years, and from what we're led to believe, the one draft that he had significant say in, 2014, was pretty dreadful, other than Jordan Matthews and maybe Josh Huff. So do we want him making the key personnel decisions? I don't know.
Well, that's a fair question to ask. You know, he's a guy that's only been in the NFL for 2 years. It's not like he's been in the league for a long time. I'm sure he knows football, but the NFL is a whole different game. And I do believe, and I think most people believe, that this last draft was his. You're right. I mean, to this point, it looks like you got one player. And your first round draft pick, you couldn't even get on the field. So if that reflects, you know, what happens when Chip Kelly gets full control of a draft, God help you. You know, I mean, if that's what it's going to be moving forward. I've always felt that that the best football teams, and you look at the teams that win and the ones that have won at all recently, have generally been teams where you have a dual power structure within the organization, where you have the coach and then you have a general manager / personnel director who work together to where the personnel guy, he builds the roster, he handles the contracts, he handles the free agency, he handles the draft, and the coach coaches the players. There aren't many situations where you've had one guy who oversees everything and controls everything, and it's successful. If you look at the teams that have won lately, most of them have had these sort of two-pronged operations that work very well, but they will only work if the two sides see the team the same way, if they have the same vision, they have the same plan, and they can work together. If the two sides can't work together, then you have no chance. You know, it's hard enough in the National Football League to win when everybody's working together, when you have everybody, to use the coach's expression, when you have everybody on the same page. If you don't have that, I mean, it's not a guarantee that you will win, but if you don't have that, it's a guarantee that you won't.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Ray, tell me the story, or tell us the story about, I think it's true, about the draft board a couple days prior to the draft last year, and Chip Kelly not liking that board and tearing it down, or what happened in that deal?
Well, you know, none of us were in there, so we only get second or third or fourth hand accounts of what happened. But from what I was told, and this may have been the beginning of a lot of this going on, is that Howie, as the general manager and the head of personnel, has his own army of scouts and guys that go out and do the legwork, and they do the breakdowns on the tape, and they look at the players and they file reports on the players and they give grades to the players that are getting ready to come out in the draft. And then with all of that information at hand, teams build what they call, and almost all teams, I guess probably all teams, have what are called a draft board, which means you put all the names of all the players that are in the draft up on the wall, and you stack them by position and you stack them by grades. So you look, you have all the wide receivers top to bottom, you know, by grade, from going from number one all the way down to number 50, and then tackles the same and guards the same. So when the draft begins, you walk into the room, and on all the walls you have these boards and all these names, and they're all stacked by grade. And that was really the handiwork of Howie and his scouts last year. They did the scouting, they handed out the grades, they stacked the boards. And from what I was told, or from what I had heard, that Chip and his coaches came in, and this was after having worked some of these guys out and having gone to the combine and, you know, going to the Senior Bowl, and they had looked at some of these guys, and they came in and they looked at the boards and they just said, well, we don't agree with these grades, and they just started shuffling names up and down, and because it was Chip and because it was his guys, they basically kind of reshuffled everything and sort of took all the work that Howie's guys had and just basically tossed it out the window. And, you know, that obviously didn't sit very well with the scouts. And if that was the case and that was what influenced the Eagles draft, well, you know, maybe Howie's guys got it right, because what right. The Eagles wound up what the Eagles wound up drafting wasn't much. I mean, you had a whole draft and you wound up with one player to show for it.
Yeah, what was it? Was that just a couple of days before the draft that supposedly happened, or did they actually have time to regroup a little bit?
No, I don't know. I just know it was before the draft. Whether okay. It was a day before, 2 days before, or a week before, I don't know. But in essence, what it was, you know, they had it set up the way the scouts had thought it should be set up, and Chip and his guys came in and disagreed, and basically were allowed to change it all around. And I mean, that was a pretty clear statement of who had the power and who was going to run the draft. And, you know, when you consider what Howie and the scouting department, that's basically what they spend all year doing that. I mean, while the coaches are off coaching and coaching games and trying to win games from September through December, the scouts are out on the road doing their scouting reports. I mean, this is what they've been doing all year. And to see the coaches come in and all of a sudden just blow it up, because, you know, they don't really agree, and the scouts don't have very much to say about it, you can see where that would cause a little hard feelings.
Sure.
Ray, we've heard already six or seven different names out there as potential GM candidates for the Eagles. Chris Polian of the Jags, he's their director of pro personnel. Chris Greer from the Dolphins, Brian Gain from the Texans, Elliot Wolf from the Packers, Sheldon White in the Lions organization, and a guy that I heard Ruben Frank thinks is going to be a real star in this league before long, Ed Manowitz, who's currently in the Eagles organization. Any of these guys stand out in your mind?
I think it's going to be Manowitz.
That gives you some continuity, a guy who's already been there and knows both Howie and Chip, right?
Yeah, and I think that the way this thing seems to be shaking out to me is Chip has all the cards right now, and he's a guy who just has his circle of guys that he knows and trusts, and I don't think he knows a whole lot of these other guys they're talking about. And if he's the one that's going to make the ultimate decision here, and I think he is, Manowitz would seem to make some sense to me, because he's been in-house now for a while. He worked for Nick Saban at the University of Alabama. He was the chief recruiter for Saban at Alabama. And Nick Saban is best friends with Bill Belichick. I mean, they coached together before. They're best friends. And, of course, Chip and Bill Belichick are tight. So I think that's, to me, when you're talking about a guy like Chip who has his as his little circle of guys that that he likes and that he trusts and that he feels like he can talk to. To me, Manowitz, with the Saban-Belichick connection, seems to fit the profile better than the other guys from the outside. So, I mean, I don't know. No one has whispered anything in my ear about this. But if I've learned anything about Chip, it's that he tends to go with people he knows and trusts. And I think Manowitz would fit that description more than some of the other names that have been mentioned.
Hey, Ray, I wanted to ask you, you've covered hundreds of press conferences in your tenure. What did you think of the postseason press conference and Chip's reactions and I'll say hostile answers, or if that's the right word, but definitely out of character? This wasn't the same fun-loving guy by any means. What was your take on that?
I'm not so sure he's so fun-loving.
I was going to say smart aleck answers, but
that's more like it. Fun loving is not exactly the way I would describe him. He's a wise guy, and he does not suffer fools gladly, and that's kind of how he views the media. You can kind of tell in his bearing, you can kind of tell with his impatience and some of the answers that the flippant dismissals of a lot of questions, is that he doesn't have much regard for the guys asking the questions. He thinks he's wasting his time with them. He doesn't think they grasp what he's trying to do, and he's very dismissive. He wears it better when they win because everybody's kind of in a good mood and the questions he's answering are generally pretty friendly questions. But when the team loses, which this team lost a lot down the stretch, and when the season ends and people perceive that they've underachieved and the questions become a little more pointed, a little more prickly, he will respond in kind. And that's kind of what you got there. I mean, I had heard that when, I talked to some people when the Eagles hired him from Oregon. They said, get ready. He's different than most other coaches you've seen and you've dealt with before. And he doesn't make himself available. As you can see, nobody gets one-on-ones with him. Nobody gets close to him. He's been here for 2 years, like all the national, all the Sports Illustrateds and New York Timeses, and everybody's wanted to get to come in and do the definitive Chip Kelly, and they get no access to him at all. He makes himself available as infrequently as the league allows, and that's the way he would prefer it. He just lives in a world that's 100 yards long. I mean, he just lives for football. He's a total X's and O's guy. He's totally consumed by football, and he regards answering questions as a waste of time. And that's on his good days. When it's not a good day, you're going to get what you got the final day after the end of the regular season.
Well, we're happy you're okay with answering these questions, Ray. Now, was it just turnovers catching up with the Eagles in December, or was it something beyond that? And what do the Eagles need to do in the offseason to get better?
Well, it was. We said all along, I can't count how many times on the postgame show, and when they would win a game and turn the ball over three times and win a game, and I kept saying, you can't keep doing this and win games. You just can't. It's just, no team, at least in my knowledge, in the history of the National Football League, has ever led the league in turnovers and still gone to the playoffs, or certainly won a championship. It just doesn't happen. Now, the first part of the season, it kind of got masked by a few things. The schedule was pretty forgiving. A lot of the teams weren't very good. And the Eagles were getting big plays from other areas. I mean, you were getting a ton of special teams plays, either kick returns or blocked punts for touchdowns. The defense was forcing, intercepting balls and taking them back for touchdowns. I mean, they had 11 returns for touchdowns, which is a mind-boggling number for one season. And, that covered up, that combined with having some bad teams on the schedule early, covered up for a lot of that other stuff, the poor red zone efficiency and the number of turnovers and the bad penalties. They were sort of able to spackle over a lot of that stuff and win games. But over the course of 16 games in an NFL season, all that stuff tends to even out, and you can't game plan for a lot of special teams touchdowns, and you can't game plan for safeties to intercept passes and run them back for touchdowns. Those things kind of just happen. You can't game plan for those. And the feeling was by the end of the year, that stuff was, you know, the percentages were going to even out a little bit. You weren't going to be able to continue producing those on a weekly basis. And then that's when those mistakes that you made, unless you get rid of them, were going to start coming back and biting you. And that's what happened at the end of the year. It isn't that they changed a lot or they became less efficient on offense. They kind of were what they were all season. But this defense and the special teams weren't able to cover up for it by the end of the year. But, you know, that's where they really have to get better. I mean, they have to find a way to eliminate that stuff. They certainly have to get better in the red zone. My goodness. I mean, for a team that scored as many points as they scored this year, they were still, I think, 24th in scoring on play efficiency inside the 20, which is totally unacceptable. And, the, you know, 36 turnovers, 27 of them at the quarterback position is just going to kill you. So, I mean, those are things that they definitely have to work on. I mean, they can talk all they want about the number of points they scored and the yards that they gained and all that kind of stuff, but it doesn't matter. If you keep giving the ball away and you don't score when you're inside the 20, you're not going to be a championship team. The two just don't go together.
Well, Ray, you went right where I was wanting to go next, because the turnovers from the quarterback position, and tied to our trivia question about trading first-round draft choices – what's your take on Marcus Mariota, and will Chip go all in and try to get this kid that knows how to run the offense the way he wants it run?
Well, I mean, that seems to be the theory that most people have now. It's one of the reasons that Chip wanted to clear the decks and get all the power was he wanted to go all in to go get Mariota, and he didn't want to have Howie or anybody else in the organization was going to stand up and say, no, we can't pay that price. You know, Chip wanted to be in a position where he's going to make the call. And maybe that's his thinking, but I think it's kind of naive. I mean, I don't see how you can trade up from number 20 and get to number 2 or 3, which is probably where you would have to be, or 1 even, to get Mariota. I just don't think it's possible. I mean, you can concoct, you know, a lot of different scenarios, but I don't see any of them as being within the realm of NFL reality. I just don't think it can be done. Are they talking about it internally? Yeah, probably. I think Chip would love to have Mariota come in and be his quarterback. But I just don't see how you can get from 20 to 1. I just don't see how you can make that trade. That's, you know, it's one of the things that Chip, you know, when you think about a guy who spent his whole life in college football, and he's new to the NFL. One of the beauties of being a college coach is if you see a player you really want, if you see a quarterback out there that you really want and he's perfect to run your offense, and you're a college coach, you know, all you have to do is you can go to his front door and knock on his front door and say, hey kid, I want you to come play for me, and you can do it. You know, that's called recruiting. You just go and you just out recruit the other guys, you know, and you just offer them more and you sweet talk them more and you promise them more. And you tell mom that, you know, she's beautiful, and you tell dad he's a great guy, and the next thing you know, the kid's, you know, riding back to campus with you, and that's how it's done in college. Well, in the NFL, there are rules in place, and you can't just go get those guys. You know, you got the draft, and you got a salary cap, and so it's not as easy. I mean, you can see players out there, boy, I'd love to have them. And in college, you just go get them. In the NFL, it's not that easy, and that's one of the things that Chip's going to learn. He may want Marcus Mariota all he wants, but I just don't think that the way the things work in pro football, he's going to be able to do it.
Ray, speaking of going and getting guys, key offseason moves I think the Eagles have to make, re-signing Jeremy Maclin, obviously, and improving the secondary. What are the chances they can sign a Darrell Revis or a Byron Maxwell among the free agent cornerbacks who are out there?
Well, I think they can. I mean, their salary cap situation is pretty good. They'll have some money. And it's a question of where they want to spend it. I certainly think that is where they should spend it. They're probably going to have to do a few things. They have some decisions to make on some of their own veteran players. They've got Trent Cole is up for a new contract for big money. What are you going to do with him? You know, Brandon Graham is a guy that's going to be up for a new contract, and he's going to want to be paid like a starter. What are you going to do about Mark Sanchez? You're going to bring him back. What are you going to pay him? So they have all those decisions to make. But even with that, I think they can still go out and bring in at least one pretty big-name free agent. And in my view, it should certainly be a defensive back and a cornerback, I think. And the two that you mentioned are probably the most obvious choices. Revis is playing very well. He's really back on his game now. I mean, he had a really, really good year for New England. And I don't know how much he wants to stay there. Revis is really, he's really a hired gun. I mean, he's looked for all the different teams. He's played for the Jets. He's played for the Bucks. He's with the Patriots. I mean, he's a guy that he's going to go where people pay him the most money. So I think you could probably, if the Patriots are willing to let him, if he's willing to go out to free agency, I think you have a chance to bid for him. But he's 30 years old. That's a concern. I would actually be more inclined to pursue Maxwell, who I think is a younger guy whose game is just really getting better and better. And I think with looking at Seattle's salary cap situation, I think they're going to have trouble. I think they're going to have trouble keeping him. I mean, they've got an awful lot of money tied up in their secondary now with Sherman and Thomas. I don't know for the kind of money that I'm sure Maxwell's going to want to go out to free agency, and the kind of contracts he's going to command. I don't know if they can match it. They could always franchise him, I suppose. But that, again, you're talking about an awful lot of money there. So I think there's a very good chance he's going to be on the market. And if I were the Eagles, boy, I would be first in line because I think he's exactly the kind of player they need. And not just one. I mean, they need more than one player in that secondary. They need at least two, maybe three. But he would be an awfully good place to start.
Well, Ray, I have one last question for you, and then we're going to give you back to chat for a few minutes. But we raised the question on Facebook the other day on the social media, and I am we got a lot of crazy answers on this, but I think I am probably way off on the far end of this. So the question was, what is the biggest mistake that the Eagles have made in the last 9 to 12 months? And the question, choices were letting DeSean Jackson go, drafting Marcus Smith, or giving Chip Kelly full personal control. I'm on the side that says exactly what you started out the show with. What makes anybody think that Chip Kelly has the ability to evaluate professional personnel? I'm more worried for the future, big picture, than I am about Jackson and Smith.
Mm-hmm. Well, I see what you're saying. I guess the they're kind of different answers in that you've already seen one of them play out. I mean, you've already seen the DeSean thing play out. With Marcus Smith and Chip, you don't really quite know where that's going to go. You know, there's always a possibility that Marcus Smith could mature into a pretty good player. I mean, we've seen some guys who are non-factors as rookies. By their second year, they kind of get it, and they begin to emerge and come back and become really good players. Sometimes that happens, sometimes it doesn't. With Marcus, we don't know yet. If you were to ask me right now, how optimistic am I? I would say not very, but we don't know that one. And as far as Chip goes, I just don't think this is the way it's going to work. I just keep going back to when they first hired him. And I think his first press conference, he was asked about something very much like this, about how much control he wanted. And he was very explicit about the fact that, look, I am not a personnel guy. I'm not a salary cap guy. I'm not a contract guy. I'm a football coach. I mean, he said that repeatedly. And I sort of took him at his word. I mean, I thought, okay, he's a football coach. I get that. I mean, he needs to have guys around him that are going to do that kind of stuff, and that's fine. You know, most of the teams that win in the National Football League do it exactly that way. That's why just 2 years into it, and frankly, coming off a year that was not particularly great or inspiring, for him to now all of a sudden want to become the chief cook and bottle washer down there, to me is a huge departure from his original position, and I think a little scary because I think he's a good coach, but, I mean, he's assuming an awful lot of responsibility right now with not a whole lot of NFL experience.
Well, that's exactly my point, too, and that's why I worry a lot about the future. But I think we're pretty much on the same page. Well, hey, Ray, the last time you joined us, we had you on the rapid-fire hot seat. Well, we've changed that up a little bit for the new year, and now we have a segment that you're going to be the first participant, if you don't mind, and we're calling it 10 and 5. Basically, you'll be asked 10 questions by Chet, 5 minutes to answer. It should be a lot of fun, I think.
Okay.
Go ahead, Chet, take it away.
Yeah, with the new calendar year here, we are shaking things up a bit, just like the Eagles are. Rapid fire was so 2014, you know. All right, number one, Ray, we're pretty sure Nick Foles will be the opening day quarterback in September, but will Foles end up becoming a free agent after next season?
Well, you know, that's I don't know how to answer that other than to say, you know, we'll see. Which is, I mean, that's the answer nobody wants to hear because it seems like a non-answer, but it's the only one I can give. I mean, I still think that Nick Foles can play in this league. I still think Nick Foles can win football games. I mean, he's proven that when he's the starting quarterback, they generally win. And so I looked at this year as kind of a year where, like a lot of young quarterbacks, they have their ups and downs, and they have their bumpy stretches. I think last year he was so successful, I mean, so over the moon successful, that it sort of cost people from not remembering the fact that he really still is a young guy. And I think a lot of the stuff that happened to him this year is what happens to young quarterbacks, and wasn't all his fault: line injuries, inability to run the ball early, reshaping the passing game without Deshaun. I mean, all of that had impact, and it all fell on him. But I'm not prepared to write off Nick Foles, and I still think he could be the future of this team.
All right. Number two, Ray, on a percentage basis, what's the likelihood that these free agents-to-be is back with the Eagles in 2015? Jeremy Maclin, Nate Allen, and Bradley Fletcher.
I would say Bradley Fletcher, zero. I would say Nate Allen, 10%. And I would say Jeremy Maclin, 98.8%.
Sounds about right. On a percentage basis, number three, what are the prospects that Brandon Graham and Trent Cole are back with the Birds this fall?
I would say Trent Cole, 55%, with a contract renegotiation. They're not going to bring him back and pay him what his contract currently calls for him to be paid. He's going to have to restructure his contract and ultimately maybe take a little less money. But I think he's indicated at the end of the year that he would like to stay here and do that. So I would say they'll work out a new contract deal that will allow Cole to stay. Brandon Graham wants to be a starter, and he wants to get starter money. He's not going to get that here. I think he's going to test free agency, and once he gets to free agency, I think some team will offer him enough that he will leave.
All right. Number four, have you ever seen a call like we saw on Sunday when the Cowboys got hit with a pass interference penalty, the refs announced the penalty, and then they picked up the flag and said, never mind?
I don't know if I could cite a specific case of one that's as egregious. I mean, we've seen bad calls over the years. But that one was really bad. And that one's going to stick for a while. You know, what makes it particularly bad was the fact that it got picked up. We've seen bad calls before. I mean, the tuck rule game is one for sure. I mean, we all go back to that. But that stood. I mean, it was a rule that a lot of people didn't understand and still don't understand, but at least it stood. This was a call that they got right in the first place and then picked up the flag. And it clearly, absolutely, positively impacted the outcome of the game. I mean, if the Dallas Cowboys lose this week in Green Bay, the story will probably end there. But if the Cowboys should win and go on to the Super Bowl and perhaps win the Super Bowl, people are going to talk about that. People are going to talk about Pete Morelli's crew forever. I mean, it's going to go down with the tuck rule as one of those kinds of moments in pro football history. That if it's part of a championship season story for the Cowboys, it's going to be a big part.
All right, who wins the Cowboys-Packers game on Sunday?
I think the Packers. It's you know, you've got a team that hasn't lost a game at home versus a team that hasn't lost a game on the road. So something has to give. I think an awful lot has to do with the health of Aaron Rodgers. I mean, we keep hearing about this calf injury. We saw what happened in the last game where he really struggled to come back. He was able to win, but I mean, I don't know how healthy he is right now. If he's really hurting, then that could be a problem for the Packers. But I'm assuming he's going to be okay to play, and if he's good to go, then I like the Packers at home.
All right, let's pick up the pace and get through the second five real quick. Eight NFL teams remain. Ray, what's the most likely Super Bowl matchup February 1st?
Seattle, New England.
Sounds good. College football championship game Monday night in North Texas, Oregon versus Ohio State. Who do you have?
I will take Oregon, although I have tremendous respect for Urban Meyer. I think he is just a great college football coach. I mean, what he did this year with a team that lost not only its first-string quarterback, but its second-string quarterback. And this kid started two games, and he wins the conference championship 59-0 and then upsets Alabama and Nick Saban. It's incredible. I mean, tremendous credit to the kid, but I'm even more credit for Urban Meyer. I think he's a fabulous coach. I will still pick Oregon, but I would not be shocked if Ohio State pulls it off.
Final three questions. You're not just a football guy, Ray. The Phillies are in something of a dismantling mode. Back-to-back 79-win seasons. Now they're trading guys like Rollins and Bird. How bad are they going to be this summer?
Really bad. I mean, last place in the division, and we'll struggle to win 70 games. I think they're going to be that bad. I think it's going to be a very long summer down at the ballpark with a lot of empty seats.
Number nine, your post-game live colleague Ed Rendell just had a birthday on Monday, number 71. Now, when has he been most impressive, Ed the mayor, Ed the governor, or Ed the football analyst?
Well, I certainly enjoy working with him. It's a lot of fun. But I think he's probably at his most impressive when he was the mayor of Philadelphia. I think he brought this city back from a very deep, dark hole. If you think about what Philadelphia was when he first became mayor, the city was in really bad shape, and he restored it. He put Philadelphia back on its feet, put a bounce in its step, and gave it back its pride and its identity. I think he was just a magnificent mayor for this city and a real hero. Well, a lot of what Philadelphia is today, it owes to Ed Rendell.
And number 10 and final question, is it true that Ray Didinger still doesn't own a smartphone?
That is absolutely true. No cell phone, no smartphone, no iPad, no iPod.
You don't even have a cell phone, really?
I do not.
Mark Eckel told me that. I didn't believe it. I did not believe that. Wow.
I do not. I'm the last of the landline journalists.
Ray Didinger,
good
thanks
for you.
Being
it's a whole lot less headache, Ray.
Well, listen how good the connection is.
It sounds great. It does.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you, Ray Didinger.
All right, guys.
Well,
it was
Ray,
a pleasure.
I think we took up a little more of your time than we were supposed to, so we will let you go, and we certainly appreciate you joining us again and hope we can do it again.
It was my pleasure, guys. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Take care, Ray.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Thanks, Ray.
Bye-bye.
All right, we'd like to thank our sponsor, ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. By logging on to ShopForKisses.org's website, you become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. All right, Chet, let's give our trivia question out again to win the Gino Marchetti signed black and white 8x10 photo courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles to the first person that calls in and correctly answers the question. This one's an easy one, Chet. When is the last time the Eagles traded their first-round draft pick? Don't get much easier than that, brother. Again, Our call-in question is 929-477-2855.
Just to be clear, it's not just moving up or down in the first round. It's actually getting out of the first round, right?
Right. Last time they traded their first-round draft pick. Yep.
Okay.
Okay. And just a real quick story because we ran over a little bit, but I did want to – I got a quick Gino Marchetti story from just a few months ago. As you know, I was working down at that memorabilia show down in Chantilly, Virginia, and I was working with Nick Bonacani. And over the PA system, as I'm sitting there with Nick as he's signing his things, and the PA system says, last call for Gino Marchetti. And Nick Bonacani says, now that's a football player. That's an autograph I want.
And
nice. I thought that was pretty good. Well, hey, we have a caller. Let's see if this is for our trivia question answer right now. Here we go. Welcome to the show.
Evening, gentlemen.
Hello, how are you? Is this Frank?
Yes, sir.
Sounded like Frank. Go ahead. What you got, Frank?
Chet, how you doing? How you doing, Chet?
Good, Frank.
Hey, that segment was just unbelievable. That was great with him, huh?
Yeah,
Ray's the best.
He's the man. He is the man.
He's a book of knowledge. I actually just got his new book for a Christmas gift this year. I'm looking forward to reading it. It's a great book.
I got it, too. It's a great book.
All right.
So my shot at this trivia thing, I have two answers to this. The only one that I thought of right away was the year when we got Brandon Graham.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that was 2010.
Okay. What's your second answer?
My second one was last year.
Nope.
Well, cause, yeah,
Neither one of those is the correct answer.
But I see the confusion, Bill, because last year they did trade their first-round pick and they moved down a few spots.
Yeah, they did. They moved down and they picked Knucklehead.
Right, they went from 22 to 26.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, maybe I created some confusion because this was an actual trade out. Okay. Well,
yeah,
I'll
so
tell
they
you what.
You're saying they traded their pick and had no first-round pick.
Right.
Okay.
Do I need to give Frank the answer, Chet?
No, let somebody else take a shot at it. I misinterpreted the way it was written.
Well, I might not have worded it quite right.
Okay. Well,
all right,
Frank,
hold on to that thought, and we'll come back to it.
You got it, guys.
Maybe
at the end of the show,
I'll give the answer, Chet, and we'll decide whether Frank's on target and we owe him.
Okay. Yeah, because they traded their number 22, you know?
Yep. Okay. Thanks, Frank. All right. Well, Chet, hey, pitchers and catchers report to Clearwater February the 19th. The Phils, as you mentioned, in dealing with Ray, in talking to Ray, they've not done a whole lot. They moved Marlon Byrd over the holidays. They just added 36-year-old Aaron Harang, another youngster to the roster. Still 6 weeks to go. What do you think? Anything going to change?
Well, I'm buying season tickets now that they got Aaron Harang. Every fifth day, I'll be down there to see him. Now, look, I'm okay with that signing, to be honest. The guy's 36, but he's an innings eater. He gives you 200 innings a year. He's averaged 29.5 starts over the last 4 years. He was 12-12 last year with an ERA around 3.5 or 3.9 or somewhere in there, which isn't terrible. And, you know, they just need another guy in the rotation who's reliable, and I think he gives them that. And at $5 million compared to what A.J. Burnett was being paid, I mean, that's a bargain today, right? $5 million. So I'm okay with that deal. Now, as far as the team in general, I mean, clearly they're worse off than they were last year. They're a year older, plus they've traded away Rollins and Byrd. So, you know, if they win more than 70 games, which I think is high, Ryan Sandberg should be manager of the year. So, yeah, it's going to be a long season down at CBP.
Well, I agree. And as we sit here right now, I think you're looking at Cole Hamels, Cliff Lee, Harang, Jerome Williams, David Buchanan, and Jonathan Pettibone as the six guys vying for five starting spots. What do you
think?
Yeah,
and maybe the Cuban guy too, but I don't know if he's ever going to pan out either. So
yeah,
Miguel Alfredo Gonzalez.
Yeah, I thought about him as well, but I thought, you know what, you're supposed to do something to get your name on this list. At least these other guys have pitched in the big leagues. And you know, Jerome Williams actually turned out to be a halfway decent pickup, at least last year. He came in and pitched pretty well for him. But, go ahead.
He was okay for the 3 months they had him, but I don't know if he can sustain that kind of performance over a full season. I'm not going to count on Jerome Williams to be a starter the full season.
Yeah. Is your thoughts still going to be that they move Cole?
Boy, I don't know. I thought it would have been done by now. I thought it would have been done in calendar year 2014. So now maybe they stay with him until, you know, at least June or July when some teams are willing to up the ante a bit and give them more. I guess they're just not getting enough in return as far as, you know, what teams are willing to give up right now. But I'll tell you, if you're a team in the hunt, in, say, mid-July, and Hamels is still a Philly, I think you're going to be a little more willing to give up some of those top prospects than you are here in the cold of January. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but, you know, and I guess there, that's a two-edged sword, because does he, if he comes out and he's having a good year, the value goes up even higher. If he can have a good year on this bad team, you know, then his value and asking price gets even bigger and bigger. And, you know, I'm sure the Phillies are asking for the world for the guy, which they probably should.
Yep. So,
and you
to
know,
be honest, I don't know what's going
to
happen.
I'm surprised that, and maybe it's still a health issue, he just hasn't been out to prove himself yet. I would be more interested that the Cliff Lee moves rather than Hamels. I see Cliff Lee moving if he's healthy.
Yeah, I've read that too. I mean, if he shows over, you know, the first month or two of the season that he's the old Cliff Lee and he's healthy, somebody's definitely going to be willing to take Cliff off their hands.
Yep, and I have one last question to throw at you. You're because I know you have not been a big supporter of my man Ben Revere, who finished in the top of the in the batting race, or very close to the top of the batting race. you ready to move him?
What are you going to get for him? I mean, I'm okay with keeping Ben Revere around. That outfield is not going to scare anybody. And if you're going to have him out in center and he's going to hit 300 or 310, that's not a terrible thing. I mean, the guy's going to steal 40 bases for you, which is great. You just got to hope that he's still, you know, relatively young, that he's going to get a little bit more patient at the plate and get more walks, because if he's the leadoff guy, you want to see him walking more. And you want to see him get more extra base hits. I mean, with that kind of speed, he should be able to hit a few gappers and, you know, stretch things into doubles and triples, not just get a single and hope that he steals second. So, yeah, I can be patient and live with Ben Revere for the foreseeable future, sure.
All right. Well, I'm going to tell you, in my opinion, the most underrated 310 hitter that I've ever seen. I mean, nobody likes the guy. Nobody thinks he ought to be here. And the guy... it fights for batting titles. I just don't really understand that. But we'll talk more about that as the season approaches, and we'll see where Ben stands. I like him. Anybody gets on base and hits the ball, I like. Well, hey, what about your 76ers last night with their first home win?
Okay, they beat a Cleveland team that didn't have LeBron James or Kyrie Irving. And I guess one or two other guys who were being traded weren't there either. So they were without four of their top five scorers, I believe. Yep. But still, a win is a win, and it's win number five. The Sixers are now out of the basement, which says two things. It says, hey, maybe they're improving a little bit. And it says, boy, the Knicks are really, really bad, even worse than everybody thought they were going to be. But hey, five wins at this point in the season, that's probably two or three more than I would have thought they would have had at this point. So I think they're not going to challenge that nine-win season of 1972-73. I think they're going to get at least double-digit victories. They are showing some signs that they can, you know, play hard. The defense isn't always there, but some nights it looks better than others. Same with Nerlens Noel. Some nights he looks like he can really, really be a player, especially on the defensive end. He's still going to get better. He's going to bulk up and, you know, throw his muscle around a little more, which will help get him better position and, in the process, more rebounds. So I'm liking what I'm seeing generally from Nerlens Noel. Michael Carter-Williams, I think, has been pretty steady for the most part. He's had a few clunkers thrown in there. So, you know, I think things are looking up. I think this is exactly what Sam Hinkie and company wanted to see. You know, not a whole lot of wins this year, so you're in the bottom two or three in the league. You get as many lottery balls as you possibly can, and they're probably going to finish either worst or second worst in the league still, so they will have a lot of lottery balls. And then, you know, you got all these guys coming in the next year or two. The guy from overseas and Joel Embiid coming back hopefully healthy this coming fall. So the future is bright, as we like to say.
Well, you know, I'm surprised. I think that the 76ers brass has to be surprised, too, that the Knicks just absolutely stink. And they spent a ton of money on Phil Jackson. He doesn't play. But, you know, they spent a ton of money there. And then today, you know, they started their salary dump, too. They traded. They made some trades. And they, you know, now they're going to play for last. And quite honestly, I think it's we'll see how this plays out here in the next month or so, but it's an embarrassment. It's an embarrassment to the NBA, I think, that this the way this is all set up. You know, if they go ahead and deactivate Carmelo Anthony for the rest of the season, which is being talked about, and they're dumping salaries and they're going to try to finish last, and the Sixers are trying to finish last, and you know, it's just a mess, and somehow it's going to have to be addressed.
Yeah, but you know, as we've seen so often over the years, the team that does have the worst record doesn't seem to get that first pick anyway. So, you know, even if you do have the worst record, there's no guarantee you're going to get that number one pick, and I guess that would be Okafor from Duke if he comes out. Look at Cleveland last year. They were, what, fourth or fifth in the bottom, and they got the number one pick. So you just don't know how it's going to play out. You're guaranteed, I think, at worst, number four overall. Is it four or five? I don't know. But, you know, There's no guarantee, even if you finish dead last, that you're going to get the first or even second pick.
Yeah, I guess just the whole, you know, at least in the Sixers, once everybody kind of digested what they were doing, there really is a plan in place. You know, with the Knicks, this wasn't the plan, and now all of a sudden we're in the middle of the season and we're going to start dumping everybody, and now we're going to create a plan where it's almost like, okay, let's just throw the rest of the season away and dump all of our salary. It's just, to me, it's just a mess. And again, I'm not sure how it's going to be dealt with, but the league is going to have to deal with it. You can't have all the guys at the top and all the guys so far at the bottom that there's too big of a gap.
I hear you. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, what about the Flyers? They picked up a shootout win last night. Go figure that. Wayne Simmons scored the tying goal and then again the game-winning goal. But I understand today that Steve Mason got injured and had to leave practice for an MRI, and that's not good. He was last night's number one star.
Yeah, I heard that, and you got to hope that's nothing serious. He's had some problems already this season. He had to miss a few games last month. They need Mason, let's face facts, because Emery's a good backup, but he's not a guy you want to have in there every game. So they got to make sure Mason is healthy. If he's got to sit out a few games, so be it. As for last night, the shootout victory, I almost had a little bit of a heart attack because that was, what, the first time in 12 or 13 shootouts that they actually, you know, won that way. You just pencil in an overtime shootout loss when the Flyers get to that point. So to see them win one last night, very surprising. And, you know, maybe it's something that's going to kickstart them. And they have this little homestand here. So maybe they can win a few games and make a little headway in what's still going to be a long battle to get back into playoff contention.
Yeah, well, you know, they started that 8-game road trip with 3 wins, and it looked like they were going to be okay
losses,
if you come out of there halfway decent. And then they turn around and get 5 losses to go with it, or 4 and a tie loss. That's not good. And, you know, I guess the big concern still is they're playing with a 2-man offense with Jake Voracek and Claude Giroux. And, you know, Wayne Simmons is starting to score some goals, but he doesn't have a whole lot of assists. And the fourth leading scorer on that team, or tie for third, is a defenseman, for crying out loud.
Oh, yeah, they gotta spread the wealth around a little bit, that's for sure.
Yeah, are you still holding on that they can make the playoffs?
Not at this point. They got to show me a lot more than they've showed me so far in the season. The season's almost half over. You know, we're getting close to that halfway point, and they're still, what, 9 or 10 points out of a playoff spot. So they got to get on a little bit of a run here to make me really think that it could happen. So right now, I'm going to say they're going to be on the outside looking in, but we shall see.
Greg Berube in trouble?
If it were me as GM, I would say Berube would be in trouble. But I don't think Hextall is going to do anything. I think he's going to give him at least this whole season. If they don't make the playoffs this year and they look bad over the final 3 months, then he's gone. But I have a hunch that Hextall is going to keep him around for the full season just to see what happens. But you never know.
Yeah, and one last comment on the Flyers. It was exciting last night during the game to see the faces of the youngsters that are down there in the farm that are ready to come. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see as the season goes on, they start bringing these young kids up and giving them some big league opportunity.
Yep. Hey, one other thing we didn't get to touch on this when we talked about the Phillies earlier. The Baseball Hall of Fame, you okay with Smoltz, Pedro, Randy Johnson, and Craig Biggio going in?
I am. I'm good with them. You know, the only problem I have with the whole thing is Mike Piazza needs to be in the Hall of Fame, and there's no reason for him not to be. So I'm no problem with the four that are in, but Piazza needs to be in soon.
I agree with you wholeheartedly on both fronts. All four of those guys were deserving. Piazza, as I mentioned on Facebook yesterday, it's probably just, you know, some whispers of him maybe juicing back in the day to get some of that extra power. Nothing ever substantiated to that end. So I think it's probably just that. I think Piazza will get in probably next year. He was, 69.5% or so in this vote the first time around. So I think Piazza will get in, and he is definitely deserving. Look at those numbers for a catcher, well over 400 home runs, and, you know, just a great, great hitter. What was he, a 300 hitter also for a catcher? That's pretty good.
Yes, it was. And you know, I heard somebody say, well, you can't get that good if you were a 62nd or 52nd or whatever round draft.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Choice. Well, you can't hold that against the guy.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Right. Well, hey, Chet, our friends over there at Carl's Cards and Collectibles in Havertown are celebrating their 20th anniversary this year, and they're doing it with a bang. Flyers Stanley Cup goaltender Bobby Taylor will be in the store this Sunday night, January 11th, from 6 to 8. That's a night signing, so 6 to 8 this Sunday. And Carl will follow that right up with Brian Westbrook in the store Saturday, January the 24th. Of course, you know, Brian Westbrook's a great, great guy, great guest. So one little quick story, Chet. I need Bobby Taylor on a team picture to complete the Stanley Cup champions. He's the last guy that I needed. So that picture will be complete with all signatures. Been working on that for years and years and years, and the Chief will be the last guy.
Cool.
Yep, so I'm excited about getting that. Carl does a great job, as you know, Chet, getting guests in, and we hope everyone can support his efforts. He has a Facebook page, website. Check out all the details there, and it should be a lot of fun. Well, hey, Chet, any quick parting shots for the week?
Did we make our picks for the college football championship?
Oh, we did not.
I got to go Oregon.
Oregon. Well, you know what? Just for fun, I'm going Buckeyes. And the
okay.
only reason I'm going Buckeyes is, you know, from all of our conversations, I like defense. And
yep.
I think hidden be under the radar of Ohio State beating Alabama is the fact that they got behind in that game, and they made some defensive adjustments, and they shut Alabama down and managed to win that game. I'm going out on a limb, because I do think it is a limb, because Oregon's an awful good football team, but
yep.
I'm going to go Buckeyes.
Yep. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I was really impressed with what I saw from Mariota in a big game like that. And they just, you know, ran up and down the field, putting 50-plus points on the board. I mean, certainly what Ohio State did also against Bama was very impressive. So I'm hoping it's a good game, a good competitive game. And, you know, if Ohio State wins, I'm okay with that. But I'm picking Oregon.
All right. Well, hey, real quick, to touch on our trivia question and what I was looking for, and I probably didn't word it right, and we'll make that up to Frank somehow, but what I was looking for, when was the last time the Eagles traded their first-round draft pick, and I should have said out of the first round, was in 2008 when they traded to Carolina for a second-rounder, number 43 overall, and a fourth-rounder, 109th overall, and a first-round draft pick in 2009. And what they did is they ended up trading that draft pick. This wasn't part of the answer, but just the history of it. They traded that draft pick for Jason Peters to Buffalo. So they had picked Jeremy Maclin first, traded for Jason Peters with that pick also in the first, and then got LaShawn McCoy in the second round, all in 2009.
How about that?
So that
okay.
that's the answer I was looking for that maybe I didn't do a good job of wording exactly right.
Well, you and Frank have some talking to do then.
Yeah, we'll get straight on it. We'll get straight on it. But hey, we'd like to thank Carl's Cards for their continuing support of the show. Our special guest, Hall of Famer Ray Dittinger, who is just fantastic again, Chet, as he always is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
As well as Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, and our sponsor, ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. For Jim Chetchesco, this is Bill Furman. Hoping you enjoyed the show, and we'll join Philly Press Box Radio next Wednesday night, January 14th, to talk all things Philly sports. You can listen to our Facebook page at Philly Press Box Radio or on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio. I hope, Philadelphia sports fans.